Okay, so hello and welcome back to the Dentistry Online podcast. Today we are joined by Dr. Elaine Halley, who is a cosmetic dentist and principal dentist at Cherrybank Dental Spa in Perth, Scotland. So before we talk about digital dentistry, I just thought I'd ask how everything's been up there and how you've been coping with the lockdown.
So, well, we're slowly getting back to work, and we're seeing patients now. Scotland's been a bit behind England, I think, in terms of coming out of lockdown. So we've been a bit more cautious, or our government has been a bit more cautious, which has been fine. So dentistry has been a little bit caught in the middle between, there's not that many practices that don't have any NHS. So it's been a bit confusing for practices as to who can do what. But everyone's experience is slightly different, isn't it? I think across all the businesses and all the situations. But we're slowly getting back to work.
I mean, that's something. I think there was a point, I think it was everywhere in the UK, where we didn't think we'd see a return to dentistry for months and months. So I think the fact that everybody is slowly getting back is a good sign. But obviously, as we spoke about briefly before we started the podcast, obviously Aberdeen's now in lockdown. Do you know anyone based in Aberdeen, or how's that impacting dentistry up there? Do you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I do have some friends, some classmates that are dentists up there. So I think it's, I would assume that they're still going just slowly with all the correct PPE. I think the lockdown is particularly applying to restaurants and pubs and gatherings, but they're back to that don't go more than 5 miles away from home and all of that. So that is a concern, but we're a few hours away from Aberdeen, so we're just being hopeful that the same thing won't happen here.
No, definitely, fingers crossed. And how has it been welcoming patients back into the practice? Have you had any obstacles that you've had to overcome, any sort of reassurances that you've had to give your patients to sort of, you know?
They've been really pleased to see us, especially I've been here for 25 years, so we've a lot of patients that we've known for a long time, so they've been, you know, worried, are we all right, and then also really pleased to see us if they've had particular issues. And I guess the communication can be a challenge, trying to speak to people through masks. If people are hard of hearing, that can be a challenge. And also this whole, you know, you've got to keep the bathrooms closed, you know, is an issue. So you've got to just be humane with that, don't you? Because if people have traveled to come and see you, then, you know, you need to be able to provide the things that they need. So, I think people are generally just really glad, and they do feel very safe in dentistry.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, hopefully patients feel at ease when they're coming through the doors. I mean, how did it impact your practice? So what was your experience like during the lockdown, you know, when it was at its most severe?
It was a bit like, you know, the world as you knew it, I think it is for everyone, but the world as you knew it was suddenly gone, like in the space of 2 or 3 days, that sort of dawning realization that that dentists might be in a more vulnerable position. And so we took the decision just before lockdown that we would close our doors to seeing patients. And then lockdown, almost the announcement of lockdown, was a bit of a relief, because it was a bit, you know, a bit like, it's not just us. But then, of course, as I've mentioned, I've been here for 25 years. I'm a private fee-for-service practice. I don't have any guaranteed income, don't have any payment plans, I don't have any NHS. So the closing the doors on my sort of beloved building and just not knowing whether I'd be able to, you know, keep my employees or be able to open the doors again, that was a lesson in dealing with uncertainty, as I've come to call it. But then the government's plans like furlough, you know, kicked in, which made a huge difference. That really was a lifesaver for us to be able to keep our doors open eventually. So, but yeah, it's been, I think any business owner in this time, it has been stressful.
Yeah. I know, I can imagine. I mean, is there anything you think, I mean, you don't have to get too political here, but is there anything you think could have been done a little bit better, perhaps to support private dentists like yourself, where you've got no other sort of means of income? Like you said, you haven't got any NHS dentistry, you don't have any payment plans. Is there anything else you think could have been done to make this perhaps a little bit less stressful for yourself and others like you?
I think it's very hard to, you know, to answer that question. You know, those of us that are in private practice are doing it, we've made that choice to do it, and there is an element of, like any business owner, that you have to stand on your own two feet. So you know, do I wish there had been more help? Of I do, and I certainly did. You know, I had some very stressful times writing to my MP, and my MP was fantastic, and he phoned me and, you know, and was very supportive. But you know, every single business was in the same situation. So I also think, you know, of course the government couldn't just hand out unlimited, you know, funds. So I think the bit I wish had been done better was more from our own regulatory bodies and from within dentistry. I think even still, the, you know, the lack of leadership and the kind of fear-based mentality that comes, I think that I guess that's where most disillusionment came from, was just really as private practices we were just left with nobody really fighting our corner, and especially in Scotland where there's not many of us. So I think there's lots that our profession and the regulators of our profession could learn from this, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been a common theme across you know, Scotland, Wales, England and Northern Ireland. But I mean, obviously we've got our online dentistry show coming up in September, and you are going to be lecturing about digital dentistry. Why is this something that you want to talk about, and what can people sort of learn from this talk if they come along?
Well, one of the things that we've all had a bit of time to reflect on with the whole lockdown is the type of dentistry that we do. And certainly I know we all got a bit webinared out, but there was certainly lots and lots of education available during the lockdown period. And for me, I've always been really passionate in about comprehensive treatment planning. So meaning that when somebody comes to see me with a particular problem, that I don't just look at fixing that particular problem, but I have an overview of their whole mouth and everything that is going on, and then figure out what the options are, and then how can I communicate those options back to that particular patient in a way that doesn't overwhelm them or frighten them, or, you know, make them think I'm not listening to the specific concern. So the digital workflow just fits right into that. And so I think more so now than ever, because if you're using digital, you're not sending impressions, you haven't got to go to the post office. There's a lot of advantages. But combining digital workflow with treatment planning and diagnosis is really the key, I think.
Mm-hmm. And do you think this is something that's been sort of enhanced by the pandemic? Do you think this is something that has contributed to a sort of a need for it, or sort of emphasized the usefulness of digital dentistry?
Yeah, well, I certainly feel coming back. I mean, we've had scanners pre-COVID and we were using them before, but certainly coming back, I have appreciated the fact that wherever possible, I would rather do a scan and have that just go off seamlessly to the lab rather than, you know, get impressions out and have to have people going to packaging things and sending things to the post office. So I think that's not the reason for doing digital, but it certainly is a benefit, and that benefit has been made clearer of just how clean the workflow is, you know, when you're dealing mostly with digital.
Okay, no, that's interesting. I mean, in terms of sort of cosmetic dentistry as well, do you think that's, I can't remember who it was I spoke to, but it was another cosmetic dentist like yourself, and they were saying what the pandemic has perhaps emphasised is that the need for and the desire for people to sort of opt for cosmetic dental treatments, it's not going to go. This is something that's always going to have an appeal and is always going to survive things like these situations. Is that something you agree with?
Yeah, I mean, certainly we've found since we've been open again and back seeing patients that there's been a huge increase in demand. I think people are thinking about it. It's not that people are sort of frivolously saying, I know I'll get my teeth whitened or I'm interested in Invisalign. But we've seen a lot of interest in Invisalign. And I think people have been sitting at home doing the research. They've been thinking about it. I think there is a big interest in minimal invasive dentistry. So in other words, you know, less drilling and more moving teeth into the right place. So I think a lot of the patients that have been coming to see us have certainly considered and researched their options. So yeah, I think there was that initial fear that, you know, sort of appearance enhancing would be at the bottom of people's lists, but I don't know if it's the Zoom calls, everyone's been staring at themselves for so long that's had something to do with it. But no, I think I would agree that hasn't gone. People still, you know, want to feel confident and be able to express themselves with confidence.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you make a joke about the Zoom calls. It's it's possible that could be a reason why, you know, you are face to face with yourself way more than we were pre-pandemic. Have you, so obviously like what we're doing now, have you embraced any other elements of, did you do any sort of virtual consultations, for example, over the lockdown when your doors were closed? And obviously you had to maintain that patient communication, but in ways that you perhaps hadn't, I mean, you might have, but I mean, a lot of practices had never done anything like virtual sort of, yeah, virtual consultations, virtual appointments. So yeah, was that something you got on board with?
Yeah, so I've been doing virtual consults for about 2 years through a platform called Smile Virtual Consult. So I was using it as a means for patients to ask questions or get in touch that had never been to see us. So that side of things wasn't new, but what we certainly did over the lockdown period was we used Invisalign's virtual consult platform. So they set up within the Invisalign site like a calendar Zoom call platform, and that was really helpful. And so we used that to help monitor our Invisalign so that we could keep things moving on, and I went out and delivered sort of aligners to patients that I could. So we did that, and then we also used it to speak to, especially as we were first coming back, to make sure that we had a face-to-face conversation with patients to explain how things would be different, and to, you know, to a small extent you can see what the problem is. Not obviously you can't diagnose over Zoom, but if someone's got a broken tooth, you can have a better idea of what you're dealing with when they come in, so that we could explain to the patient if it was likely to be a crown or if a filling, you know, might do. We used it a lot, and we still are.
Okay, so this is, I mean, I know you said you'd used it for a couple of years prior to this, but is this something that you're going to use more often, do you think, now going forward as a result?
Well, I think the big thing it's done for us all as a population is people know how to work Zoom, don't they? So it's not such a shock. So we have had some patients that never before used it, and they're doing it on their phones, and but it's quite a nice rapport builder, you know, with people sort of going, oh, there you are, you know, and able to meet you that way. And I think also because when they do come here, we're like this, you know, and communication isn't so good when it's just your eyes. So I think if you can have a face-to-face connection over Zoom. So yeah, we're definitely going to keep using it and making use of the any sort of virtual treatment monitoring that we can do as well.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think, yeah, the PPE and the level of PPE that is required in dentistry at the moment is a massive hindrance when it comes to communication. And like, I don't know, your job is, you know, first and foremost, communication is at the forefront of it. So yeah, I can appreciate that's quite difficult. And obviously things like this allow you to maintain that, like you said, rapport with patients that you might be struggling to continue in the current circumstances. But I mean, what obstacles what were like the key problems that you faced during this time that you had to overcome? Because obviously I know you said the virtual consultations helped you, like we just said, and talk to patients, but was there anything, because obviously, you know, people were mid-treatment a lot of the time, so how were you getting around these problems that came up?
Just really speaking to people. I mean, we were quite fortunate here in Tayside that our urgent dental care centre got up and running really quickly and was really efficient. So, but having said that, we only had to send a few patients to actually have treatment. That was one of the big frustrations with implant patients, was dealing with implant related problems which just were not suitable for urgent dental care centre handling. And I did have to see one gentleman in the midst of like the worst part of the lockdown, because his bridge had come loose and he was, you know, it was becoming an airway problem. But, you know, I spoke to my defence union and I spoke to the health board, I spoke to everybody and, you know, kind of got as much reassurance that it was okay to do. But eventually, you know, I had to make the call that either I leave this gentleman to, you know, to choke on his bridge, or I actually come in with my dental nurse and we help him. And it was not, these things are not difficult, but you have to have the right tools, and you can't expect an urgent dental care centre to have everything. So that was challenging, but luckily we didn't have many of those. And now we can help people, so that's a big
that is good. It's good, yeah, you're back up and running. But I had a conversation with somebody and they said one of the things about the UDCs is obviously cosmetic dentistry is kind of not really on their agenda, because they're trying to it's focused more on the general dentistry side of things. So that doesn't actually surprise me that you had to sort of take things into your own hands, obviously, you know, taking the right precautions. But yeah, no, it sounds like a very stressful time for all of you. But would you say now that it's, you know, it's how is it feeling at the moment? You know, is the PPE, are you coping with that okay, or is there anything else that's sort of getting in the way?
Yeah, we're coping with that. We've had a few big long appointments now, and we're working slowly. I mean, we're about third capacity that we would normally be. I haven't got hygienists. They're seeing some patients, but not nowhere near the level of patients that we would have. But so as an actual working day, it's actually quite nice because you were going slow. But, you know, at the same time, I've got to make sure it's profitable and that, you know, we can keep going from a business point of view. But as long as we can keep working, I think, you know, everything else will come. And as the rules are relaxed, hopefully everything else will come. But if it goes back the other way, we might not be so confident, but just at the moment it seems to be okay.
That's good, and okay is better than not having your doors open. So yeah, I mean, fingers crossed, you know, nationwide that everything sort of stays as it is or only gets better from here on in. But in terms, I mean, if I asked you this question probably 6 months ago, you'd have a different answer maybe. But how, you know, in this current state now, from what you know, how do you think COVID-19 is going to impact the future of cosmetic dentistry?
It's hard to know how is it actually going to impact, but I certainly think it hasn't gone away. So I think that initial concern of, you know, nobody's going to want their teeth whitening in the big scheme of things, I don't think that's true. I think people, you know, much like everyone's rushing back to the hairdressers, I think people are desperately keen to see the hygienists and get their mouths clean and healthy. I think there's a definite interest in health and that underlying feeling that should we go back into lockdown, I don't want to have problems. So although cosmetic dentistry, you know, as a definition is maybe on the edges of that, I think all of us that are involved in cosmetic dentistry, health comes first. Yeah. And a healthy smile tends to be a more attractive, beautiful smile anyway. So I think it hasn't gone away. I think all the opportunities are still there. I think it's very important that we are sensible with our dentistry and we make sure that the dentistry that we're doing is easily maintained and that patients understand, you know, the risks and benefits of doing certain procedures. Because I think if anything, this has taught us that we may need our patients to be able to look after themselves for a period of time at any time. And so we want to make sure that our dentistry is stable and has been well planned. And that we're not going to have emergencies, hopefully. So I think, yeah, well-planned, well-executed dentistry with informed patients who understand the sort of risks and benefits is the way forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like I mentioned earlier, communication at this point is vital. And like you said, if things are shut down again temporarily, you need to be confident that the patients know what to do and how to maintain their oral health, basically. So I completely agree. So just moving on to the final question. I don't know if you've had a chance to think about this, so hopefully you have an idea, but I always end the podcast with something just moving away from dentistry completely and asking something about yourself. So what do you like to do outside of dentistry, or perhaps what do you like to do that people don't know about you?
So I'm fortunate that where I live here in Perthshire, we're just at the start of the Highlands. And in Scotland, we've got this slight obsession with climbing Munros. Do you know what Munros are? So Munros are mountains. They have to, it's a classification of a mountain. So they have to be over 3,000 feet. And there's about 280 Munros in Scotland. So Ben Nevis is the highest one, but there's lots of them. And so there's a bit of a pastime called Munro bagging, which is where every Munro that you climb, you sort of tick off on the list. So I'm not obsessed with it at all, but luckily where we live, we have lots of access to hills and mountains. And I have this comedy dog, a little mini Dachshund who comes up mountains with me and my family. So and she cheers everybody up because everyone thinks if her little legs can make it to the top, then we've got no excuse. So
I can imagine. Oh, that's really nice. So do you tick them off? Do you sort of, how many have you done so far?
Yeah, I've done about 20 of the 282. So I don't think I'll ever get them all. There's
90% more of them to go. That's a good start. Yeah. So what did you say that the height was 3,000?
3,000 feet. Yeah. So it's a classification. I think there's then Corbett's, which are smaller, and then there's another two classifications. But some people like start out as students and they're on a mission to do them all. I know one person who is my friend's partner who has done all of the Munro. So that's like, they're rare people that have done them all. You sort of hold them in high esteem, but the rest of us just tick them off, but feel a sense of achievement that you've done another one.
How long does it take, roughly? You know, does it depend on?
It's a day. Usually it's a day. Yeah, so it's a good walk. Some of them you start higher up, so they're a bit easier. Others have got a long walk in, and some of them have got, you know, good footpaths all the way up, like Ben Lomond and some of the more famous ones. And others are a bit wilder. I like a path, I must say. I'm not really into it.
I'm with you on that one. Show me where to go and it's fine. But if I need to work it out myself, it's a bit too difficult. Yeah. Well, I need to make another trip up to Scotland, I think, and I think this time now is a good a time. Well, or maybe not right now because obviously things are getting bad again. But when this passes, I think this has shown me I need to appreciate, you know, all the things that are close to home. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I'll follow suit and have a go at that when I go up next. But thank you very much for taking time out of your day to chat to me. And yeah, good luck with everything. I hope it all goes well, and I'll see you in September.
Thank you very much.